Good evening, North-South Connection podcast fans. This is Chad Campbell. Going to be starting another series today. It's going to be more in the Pod Blast style, and it's going to be based off of the greatest WCW match project that's currently going on at placetobenation.com. If you're unfamiliar with that project and this is your first time listening, the project for the past 4 years now, placetobenation.com, has created a stretch goal project each year. The first year was the greatest WWE wrestler of all time. The second year was the greatest WWE tag team of all time. And then last year in 2019, we did the greatest WWE match of all time. This year for 2020, we are doing the greatest WCW match of all time, and that time frame goes from January 1st, 1981 through the end of WCW, so WrestleMania 17 of 2001. We are including only matches that are promoted by Jim Crockett Productions, so that would be your Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Television that's on the network, as well as the WCW New Japan Super Shows, because those were co-promoted, Collision in Korea, stuff like that. But any other situations where, for instance, Ric Flair was the NWA Heavyweight Champion, and he had a lot of title defenses elsewhere. Easiest examples: World Class at the Star Wars show on December 25th, 1982. He has a very famous cage match with Kerry Von Erich. That match is not viable for this. Anything for Georgia Championship Wrestling or Florida Championship Wrestling is not viable for this. So it's strictly Jim Crockett Productions, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and then WCW once Turner buys it in December of 1988. So if you are familiar with me at all and my footprint on the IWC and the podcast community, you know that WCW is something near and dear to my heart. Going through the podcasts, all the super shows of Where the Big Boys Play with Parv, and it's something that I grew up with. It's something I had an attraction to as an early child, even though I also watched a lot of WWF. There was something about WCW that always kind of spoke to me and was attractive to me, even as we went into the Nitro age. And I was thinking about this in the past couple of days as I was trying to want to lay the groundwork for the project and the introduction to this podcast series. And I think sometimes people have a little bit of a hurdle to get into WCW, and especially the NWA. And I was trying to figure out why that was. And I think the easiest answer is, oh, it's a more southern promotion. But I think that's kind of pigeonholing it into a more geographical standpoint. And I think basically, history is written by the winners, and we know based on the market share and the domination that WWE has currently that a lot of wrestling history is going to be painted by the WWE projection and prism of things, a way of looking at stuff. And that can be, you know, good or bad, but I think the way that WWE presents itself and really presents its wrestling from the pay-per-view era onward, where there's less an emphasis on regional feuds and stuff going on the regional front as far as house shows and whatnot, and it's a more universal feel. Something like WWE Universe kind of has a snarky, funny moniker when you hear it now. But I do think that's what they tried to create. They tried to create a universe where you had these larger-than-life superstars and characters such as Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, Macho Man Randy Savage, Ultimate Warrior. These are big, big, large supernatural characters that are larger-than-life. And even when you get into the Attitude Era, you had, oh, Rock, he's a big movie star. You had Triple H, they were the coolest guy. You know, DX was the coolest guys. You had Undertaker, a supernatural gimmick. Really only Stone Cold Steve Austin is, I think, the closest WWF or WWE in their history has gotten to the way that Jim Crockett and throughout most of the run of WCW, how it was presented and why it resonates with certain individuals. I liken WCW and Jim Crockett Promotions to kind of like a suburb town on the outskirts of a larger town. So you do have somebody, if you just close your eyes and think, like, who was the biggest larger-than-life superstar that came into WCW or Jim Crockett Promotions? Automatically, Ric Flair is the first name that pops into your mind. And Ric Flair certainly was presented as the jet flying limousine riding, I'm bringing my helicopter into the Great American Bash type star. But I also think there was a tinge that, like, Ric Flair was the regional vice president. So where I live is 50 minutes from Atlanta. So Ric Flair grew up in this town, quote unquote made good, and then he moved to Atlanta and became the big vice president of a company, and he'll go in and check in on like the regional offices that's in the smaller hometown. And that's where I think you get most of the other stars, like Ronnie Garvin or Lex Luger, that's the big jock of the town growing up, and now he's the manager of that regional office. I think you really see that. I think you, even somebody like with Dusty Rhodes and the American Dream, well, the American Dream from a Jim Crockett Productions fan standpoint is that he made good. He made better of himself from coming from humble beginnings. And the easiest contrast to that is to look at what WWF called him when he went to that promotion, the common man. So you have those ends of the spectrum where, you know, he's kind of in that same pulled up from his bootstraps, humble beginnings, made something of himself gimmick. But in one area in WCW, it's, you know, the American Dream. In the other area, he's just the common man. So I think that's the big key difference, and something that you really need to watch as you watch this footage and start compiling your list is those stakes and those kind of, you know, battles are fewer and far between. I think once you get into the Nitro era, you see more of that, because they obviously were expanding nationally. They became a national promotion. They had large shows in large arenas, such as the Georgia Dome. But before then, you really see that, where it's not this Clash of the Titans for battle supremacy of the universe that you got with both WrestleMania 3, WrestleMania 6, and onward that WWF tried to create. You saw a lot of, you know, we're just trying to do the best we can with our baby faces, and we want them to topple the supreme kind of big bad, which for most part is Ric Flair. But on the other hand, Ric Flair came from this hometown, so there's also a general sense of pride, and that's where you get like the babyface stuff of Flair that resonates so well, like versus Vader at Starrcade 1993. So I say all that to kind of give just a overview of the project at all. And for this series, I'm only going to be watching either house show matches or arena footage or television matches up until the Nitro era. So I won't be watching any pay-per-view matches. Those are easily findable on the WWE Network. I won't be watching any Nitro stuff, because that's also easily findable on the network. So this is all pre-Nitro era WCW Saturday Night, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, and then arena footage as well. If you need any access to this footage, please come into our Facebook group. You can just search for PTBN's Greatest WCW Match Ever, and you should be able to request access into the group. A lot of good discussion so far for this project. I think there's been a lot of discoveries already throughout this project, and I look forward to that continuing onward. Another caveat that I want to state right up front is just with the way that these projects are kind of tilted towards a calendar year, This project is scheduled to end on December 31st, 2020, currently. With just the way that our schedule works out, where I'm going to be alternating one of these Pod Blast shows with my 2006 series that I'm also doing, we won't be able to get to all the footage that I want to talk about by the deadline of the date, but I'm going to continue onward. I think it's more about the journey anyway. So, you know, you can always go ahead of me. You can cherry pick stuff that looks good after the point where we get to on December 31st, 2020. But I wanted to provide that caveat at first. So the first match that I watched in this footage was Ole Anderson versus Ric Flair in a strap match from from October 17th, 1981. This was in Buffalo, New York. It was handheld footage. An interesting match to start out with, because I think the pace, certainly if you watch this, is very slow. It's very methodical, a lot of strikes, but it's grounded in a solid psychology. This is not a match that's going to blow you away with the athleticism or even the chain wrestling that you will see in some of these matches involving Flair, but this was just a interesting NWA world title defense. Ole and Flair had gone kind of around the horn. They originally had teamed and then they split off, and you kind of see the basis of what your house show garden variety NWA world title defense looked like around this time, where Ole, you know, more than likely he's not going to win the NWA World Championship. But I think that they do enough throughout this match to give you a slight sense of hope that Ole might win. And that's something that's very strong throughout. I was a little surprised there wasn't any blood in this match. But the climax of this match was pretty good, where we get a crap finish where Ivan Koloff runs in, and Ivan Koloff and Ole Anderson beat down Flair until he gets some help from Wahoo McDaniel as the clip in. So, you know, a shoddy finish. If you look on Cage Match, you see they did do a loop of blow-off matches right around this time frame after the fact. But overall, this is not a match that's going to make my list. But again, this was a good kind of palate cleanser to get you into the mood for this era of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and Jim Crockett Productions promotions. And I went 3.25 stars on this one. Then we get two matches that I thought really help elevate things. One is both are from Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling TV. One is Sergeant Slaughter versus Wahoo McDaniel from April 28, 1982. We get some great interviews before the match. Wahoo says that Slaughter said that he ran him out of the territory, but he doesn't run from anybody. And then Wahoo says he's never had an opportunity to wrestle for the belt, and that Sergeant Slaughter needs to leave his recruits at home. Slaughter, you know, is a heel. One thing that I like about the heels a lot of times in NWA is they didn't really back down. So Slaughter, you know, is not really backing down. He says, "I want you in the ring now." And Jim Caudle asked him, you know, "Are these the two toughest men in the promotion?" Wahoo says he doesn't know how tough they are, but Slaughter has something he wants. So we get a 30-minute time limit. David Crockett's pumped on the call, of course. We get a Wahoo chant that fires up right away. I love this studio setting. It's very intimate. You can really hear the strikes. You can hear David Crockett on the call losing his mind. The camera angle with the elevated ring just looks great with the crowd in the background, the very sparse crowd. Just love the way this is set up and presented overall. We also learned, I like this, where this match, when it starts out, you know, Wahoo's in his promos talking about he wants the belt. But we learned right away this isn't a title match because Wahoo's been away. But if he is able to win this match, he will get an opportunity later on down the line to fight for that title. Slaughter is able to power out of the armbar with some short punches. Slaughter has a chin lock, and then the match breaks open with a really good strike exchange. Wahoo has some great strikes. I think Wahoo's a worker that not many people are familiar with, and if you're doing this project, this might be your first introduction with Wahoo, and I think Wahoo's one of those lost workers that if we had more footage from the 70s and even into the early 80s, that Wahoo would get a great reputation bump, because I think sometimes he gets kind of pigeonholed in with Chief J. Strongbo as kind of all the two big Indian gimmicks or Native American gimmicks in the world of wrestling around this time frame, and I think Wahoo's just a superior worker overall to Chief J. Strongbo. Wahoo hits a leg grapevine and has some nice little punches into the midsection of Sarge. He does have a bit of color over his eye from a stiff punch from Slaughter, but he continues to pound his fist into Sarge's leg. He pulls Sarge out of the ring and wraps the leg around the post, and then also some nice short kicks on the leg. So a really good focused attack by Wahoo here, and it's very good. And then Slaughter goes back in the turnbuckle. He tries to fire out, but Wahoo keeps keeping him in the leg to hold him at bay. Slaughter's then in the Indian deathlock position. Wahoo pounds away. Slaughter knows he's in a bad situation. He's desperate and goes for a quick flurry of punches. As we go to break, back from break, Wahoo still has the advantage, but then we get a big bump into the turnbuckle for Sarge. An atomic drop gets two chops by Wahoo, which are vicious. And then Sarge is able to get a finger in the eye, and then a knee and another flurry of punches, and now he's on the attack. Big lariat from Sarge. They talk about him wanting to set up for the Cobra Clutch. Sarge goes for it, but Wahoo's able to block the first few attempts. You really get a good sense of the desperation between these two. And then we get another big exchange with Wahoo gaining the advantage with big chops. And out comes Sarge's recruit, Jim Nelson. He comes out. And that he gets blocked away, but Knurdle's able to come in and pull off Slaughter from Wahoo's pin attempt. It's kind of fun that the people that came out to help Wahoo here was Don Morocco and Jake Roberts. So this is a really fun studio match. I went 3.5 stars. Again, I don't think it's going to make my list, but just a really entertaining studio match between two pros. Now we get something that does have a shot of making my list, and it's Roddy Piper versus Jack Briscoe. This is from July 7th, 1982. And I'll say, if you watch the first, 15, 20 matches of this footage, Roddy Piper, I think, is the person that automatically sticks out, even if you add in Starrcade 1983 with the Great Dog Collar match versus Greg Valentine. Roddy Piper is amazing, and you see his full progression, because, of course, by Starrcade 83, he's a face. Well, right here, he's definitely a prick heel. So it comes out that he has $10,000 that he demanded in order to face Jack Briscoe. Roddy gets it, and he counts it out. He realizes that he's short, so he starts yelling at David Crockett about, do you think I'm a fool? Just classic Roddy Piper here. Out comes Wahoo McDaniel and Ricky Steamboat, and they actually put up some more money, $2,000 a piece. So Roddy was correct in that Jack Briscoe, I guess, was short. And that's kind of odd, and you might think, oh, well, you know, what, is Jack Briscoe cheap? But they explain that away in a really neat way, where they say, because this is July the 7th, that the bank was closed for the July 4th holiday, so therefore Briscoe wasn't able to go to the bank and withdraw $10,000 of cash, so we only had $6,000 in cash on him. I thought that was pretty neat, actually. Piper then bans both Wahoo and Steamboat from ringside, says if they even come out or enter the studio, he automatically wins, and then he gives a great promo. Just a masterclass in promo work here and hype in the match. He hands the money to the referee, and the match is ready to begin. This feels like a huge match for TV. So good opening work to start. Really competitive mat work between the two. David Crockett is somebody I love on commentary. He presents himself as a fan, But he also has some knowledge and brings some backstory into the match that is ongoing. So he does a great job here of saying, you know, that you may hate Piper's personality, but he's competitive on the mat, and he's also a great wrestler. You don't go toe-to-toe with Jack Briscoe and not be a great wrestler. So he's not just a mouthpiece. The opening was really competitive and showed that Piper, again, could go on the mat. Jack starts taking over and starts working a headlock. Piper's complaining that his hair's pulled, which, of course, is inaccurate. And then Piper hits a back suplex and now is on the advantage. And Piper is just really intense for this match. And actually, he's busted open from the headlock, which, how many times do you see that where you get blood from a headlock? Piper starts getting more desperate as the match progresses. He starts using his ropes for leverage. And then Briscoe does an awesome punch to the knee and starts setting up the figure four. Action spills the outside with some good shots with Piper retreating to the back. And then Piper is able to lock in the sleeper, and he really works it. Really felt like Briscoe was in trouble here. They do a great job working this sleeper, but Briscoe's able to fight out with the crowd going crazy. Then Briscoe locks in his sleeper. Great selling by Piper with Briscoe on his back, as you can see him progressively getting more winded. And then Piper's able to put a finger in the ice to stay alive. And then we get the finish, which I enjoyed a lot here, where Piper ends up reaching into his tights, pulls out a roll of coins. He bashes Briscoe with the roll of coins and then wins. Piper celebrates by grabbing the belt and cash and cutting another promo. And then Piper actually says that the people threw the money into the ring when he's asked about it by David Crockett. Like, how do you explain all the money in the ring? He says that the fans threw it into the ring to show their appreciation. So this is Studio Wrestling 101. I mean, this is how you have a show-long angle from the setup to the match to the aftermath. I thought this was just immaculate. I love this. I love the work. Jack Briscoe is your former NWA World Champion, kind of coming in, your aging champion. This was before he was teaming almost exclusively with Jerry. So he's kind of at the end of his rope as a single star, but still has a great reputation. And overall, I thought this was just tremendous. So I went 4 stars on this. And like I said, it has an outside shot of making my list when all is said and done. So the last match I wanted to talk about, actually, is Ric Flair versus Roddy Piper. This was studio footage from January 1st, 1983. And we do see that Piper's a face now. We're joined in progress here, and I'm not positive who the announcers is. I think this was shown on Montreal Wrestling. Hopefully somebody can correct me, but I was unfamiliar with this. But you know, good commentary throughout, and it's just a match that you show that they're really slugging it out. We get great cutoffs by both, and then Flair goes after the leg, but Piper's able to reverse it, and we also get a reference from Jumbo Tsuruta from the announcers, which I enjoyed and thought was good in showing what was going on throughout the whole NWA territory and the world title and everything else. On the outside, Flair gets posted. Piper starts going after that gash, but he misses an elbow. And then Flair goes for a back body drop, but Piper catches him and hits a neck breaker. And Flair really hits a gusher here. You know, there's obviously a lot of blood and Jim Crockett promotion, so you're seeing a ton of blood here. Flair's just gushing it out. Piper's able to lock on the sleeper, but he gives it up. That was a flaw in the match. I didn't think he should have gave himself up. And then this is the first match I noticed where you have Tommy Young as a referee, and he's interjecting himself too much into the match, which is a common critique I have of Tommy Young. And then, again, this was just a random house show, so the NWA, you know, it was going to be kind of either a quick finish or a BS-type finish, and you got the former here, where Piper hits a crossbody, Flair rolls through with his feet on the ropes, and gets the win. So, we get about 10 minutes from the clips we saw here. Again, this is nothing that is going to make my final list, but again, was very entertaining and showed the contrast in how in just 6 short months you saw Roddy Piper be this detestable heel to now he is this clear-cut babyface that has the crowd around him. And alternatively, it shows the transition that you're going to see with Flair, because this is January 1st, 1983. Flair is clearly the heel here, but by the end of the year in Starrcade 1983, Flair is the big baby face. So that shows kind of how seamlessly these great characters and wrestlers could transition from heel and face. Piper versus Flair is a feud that later on down the line, way down the line in WCW, was not something that was very entertaining. It was more entertaining in the fall of 91 for WWF, but was not a feud I wasn't too fond of. But watching it in this context helped helped kind of fill in the blanks for me and show why this was a legendary feud between these two, and why when Flair did come into the WWF right away, it was someone they wanted him to work a program with, along with Hulk Hogan, throughout the fall of 1991, and also kind of showed how they became such great friends, because, you know, this was kind of the precipice of them becoming budding friendships that would happen throughout the rest of their lives until Roddy would tragically pass away. So that'll be it for this first edition of Carolina Dreaming. Please provide any feedback that you have from the show. And next time we'll keep plugging away, and we'll get probably one of the, I don't know, maybe one of the most 10 or 15 most famous matches in all of Jim Crockett promotions and the time frame that we're looking throughout this project, when we will enter the final conflict cage match of Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat versus Sergeant Slaughter and Mr. Knurdle. So stay tuned for that. This is Chad Campbell signing off.